this evening we have a hearing and possible work session on three bills. The first one is House Bill 4073. Richard Yates, would you like to explain the bill?
Mr. Chair, Richard Yates, Legislative Revenue. The bill, essentially the purpose of the bill is to raise $400 million in net proceeds of bonds to be deposited essentially in the state school fund. The way that it does this is to, well, first of all, it's using money that comes to the state under the master settlement agreement to pay for the debt service essentially on the bonds. The way that it does this is to create a semi-independent public corporation, and the corporation then will issue the bonds. And the state sells to the corporation a portion of its asset, which is that payment stream, that master settlement agreement payment stream. And it sells a portion of that asset to the corporation, and that becomes the master settlement asset. And it's owned by the corporation, no longer owned by the state. The payments then, the debt is structured basically to pay back within 14 years, but the pledge or the sale of the asset is essentially until the bonds are paid off. And the way that the asset comes back to the state is when the legislature essentially dissolves the corporation. You set up a board of directors for this corporation, and when you dissolve that board of directors from the corporation, the assets, revenues, property of that corporation vest in the state, so it comes back to you. So the bill estimates, or Treasury has estimated, essentially that you will have to sell 77% of that stream for the corporation to be able to sell bonds that will generate $400 million in net proceeds. What the bill does is to require the staff and the treasurer, with the consent of the treasurer, decide how much of that asset has to be sold. Then the corporation has that asset and structures the debt, essentially, that it issues so that it can, one, pay its own expenses, the corporate expenses, and pay the debt service out of that asset.
Okay.
Now, much of the bill has to do with setting up of the corporation, the responsibilities of the state, in detail, essentially, financial nature.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yates. Is there further questions of Mr. Yates on the House Bill 4073? Senator Courtney.
I'm just curious, is setting up of this corporation is like we set up state?
The setting up is intended basically to limit or to make this corporation not a state agency, so that it is an independent public corporation.
Oh, okay.
I guess I can comment a little bit of background here in the sense of this isn't an Oregon idea. This is what the market is using currently to issue like about $6 to $10 billion in debt based backed by the master settlement agreement payments in other states. They developed this mechanism which apparently satisfies the people who are interested in buying these types of bonds, which I've told is mostly mutual funds. And so the Treasury wants to use that established mechanism to market the bonds.
Thank you. The question I have is if the state sells the bonds for $400 million and the reduction in revenue actually decreases, who makes up the difference on the $400 million in bonding if the state is incapable of paying it out of the tobacco settlement?
The way, Mr. Chair, the way that the bill is structured, that is not a debt of the state. It's a debt of the corporation. and the state will not, general fund revenues or any revenues, have to pay off that debt. What the corporation owns is that percent of the master settlement payment. Now, for some reason, the master settlement agreements were violated and the payment stopped. The bondholders would essentially be left holding the bank. If the payment stream is reduced, say, to 90% of what we expect, it's just going to take them longer to pay off the bond. And it'll be longer before you get what's left of it back as a general fund revenue stream.
Thank you.
I have one more question.
Senator Courtney.
Are you somewhat unsure about everything you just said about this? Because on line 13 to line 31 on page 10, it talks about how they confer on the Oregon Supreme Court to determine manners provided section the validity of any provision of sections 1 to 16 of this act. Do we expect challenges? Do we expect, well, that's an interesting section in there that we're making sure that we don't have to do it. We go right to the Supreme. So what's going on here?
We should have counsel, I suspect, to respond to that. But when I read that, and maybe I didn't take it seriously, you know, my concern was you want to issue bonds in May, and you want to know that you have a structure that's legally sound in May. You don't want a challenge somewhere along the line which brings into question whether or not you can do this.
Would you prefer to have somebody from legislative council?
Can
you fall down there?
I'm not trying to wreck havoc on this. I find, don't you think that's sort of, I didn't react to that, I'm sorry. Is there something suspicious going on here, or? I mean, as a lawyer, you can't put language in a bill like that and not have me ask a question. But that's not a lawyer.
Is there someone from the state treasurer's office to explain the bonding?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kate Richardson, Oregon State Treasury. To the question regarding the expedited review to the Supreme Court, this legislation is based on model legislation that was provided to the state. Other states have structured their legislation similarly. And my understanding, and that's all it is that this is to provide a resolution, a fact resolution, should there ever be a challenge to it. Not, this wasn't placed in by Treasury because we expect one, but it was a part of the model legislation that was provided to us and which we provided to our state council.
Jim, one last question. So the challenge, like, we're using these funds in a way that were not intended by the settlement, is it that kind of challenge?
No. Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I think the challenge would be, here is on constitutional grounds, I believe, but it's not on the use of the proceeds. The state, there are not restrictions on that, and there would not be a challenge regarding that. I think this is from the bondholders.
Well, what is the challenge to the fact that this corporation may not be constitutional that we're creating? That's fine.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, that's actually a question for counsel, and I may have.
I don't know. That's fine.
Okay. Mr. Smith, do you want to respond by saying something?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Duke.
I don't think it's the Treasury. I'm not sure exactly who it's for. Maybe Seth. I see in here that the $400 million that comes in from the securitization will go to the state school fund for $350 million. Actually, I think it's the whole $400 million goes. We just changed their limitations. And then in response to that, we retrieved $400 million in general fund. Is that because of the some restrictions? on the money, or could we get it?
My, if I may, my understanding is in talking with actually counsel, bond counsel for DAS, that the decision of whether the bonds are taxed or not is going to be made by IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, and that they understand the situation we're in, and that if the wording is such that they are, that the money is a grant, and that that grant is going out to the schools, they will be, our advice is that they will be tax-exempt bonds. If you use them for some other general fund purpose directly, it would be very questionable as to whether or not they would be tax-exempt. But they were not concerned as long as the word grant was in there, and we talked to them directly about the question of putting it into the school fund and pay and disappropriating the same amount, and their advice was that they still would be tax-exempt on it.
Harrison Connolly from Legislative Council is here. Senator Courtney, would you like to pose your question to Harrison?
Yeah, just the legislative process on page 10, at least in my amendments of the bill, by section 16, Harrison, regarding the bringing the Supreme Court case to some kind of challenge. What kind of challenge? What is, what's this language necessary? Why is this language necessary?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I did not hear your initial question before, but I did hear part of Kate Richardson's answer. And essentially, I think that it was accurate that we got some version of this from the model legislation. We use this provision giving them a first shot of direct right to the Supreme Court, but it is not because we anticipate any particular challenge. It is primarily because bond counsel's model included a similar provision.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Senator Duke?
Who's them? We're going to give them the right to go to the Supreme Court. Who's them?
Persons who have some constitutional who are aggrieved by some section of this bill in a constitutional manner. So some constitutional problem with this bill.
But as our attorney, you don't believe and hope that there are any constitutional problems with the bill?
Chair Hannon, Senator Dukes, I do not believe that there are. And again, as I say, I'm not aware of any expectation that there will be a challenge.
Okay. Further questions? No, thank you, all three of you. We have a Senate seat. Is there anyone who would like to testify on House Bill 4073? Anyone who would like to testify? Not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4073.
You're right.
And we will hold this bill back when we go into work session on the other two remaining bills. Open the work session or public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4074. Dallas Wayne.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4074. Referred to as the program bill. It amends some existing statute to, in effect, enable the package to balance. Some specifics are this will add about $3 million to the general fund. $2.4 million is a reallocation of net proceeds from the sale of the Space Age Industrial Park and the Boardman property. A change in the allocation of the net proceeds are expected. That change in the allocation is expected to yield $2.4 million additional general fund. Also, there is a provision here that transfers $600,000 from the Department of Justice's operating account, which is an other funds account, into the general fund. This is the Attorney General's contribution to help balance the budget. This will impact some lesser priority programs, but they were willing to give up the $600,000. The bill also makes some other technical adjustments to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. It adds a couple of members that have financial background and allows some permissive language to the Secretary of State where it was mandatory that they allocate grant monies a certain way, given now that there will be less money in the trust account because of the change in the allocation of money going to the general fund. This reduces also the amount that will be paid to the County of Morrill out of the trust account. The last thing that it does is set the cap or reduces the cap on the amount of funds that are allocated, appropriated for purposes of county fairs. The amount in statute now is 1% up to $1.5 million a year. This bill reduces it, I think, to, well, we have the vehicles. My apologies. Separate bill. It does nothing to the aforementioned. Forget that. Okay. I apologize. I'm speaking of another bill. So
I can't imagine
It only deals with the industrial park and the funds for the cultural trust.
And it does, though, require the Department of Human Services to distribute a $1.2 million that has already been appropriated to it to certain safety net clinics. This is a slight amendment. This is the last part of the bill. But again, this requires no additional appropriation to the Department of Human Services. The money is already in this budget. It just provides statutory direction as to how it's allocated.
Okay. Is there any questions of committee members and staff? Senator Duke.
Mr. Chair, if we're going to have testimony on it, perhaps someone can enlighten me. I was really curious as to why we wanted to redistribute the safety net clinic money and leave out the Multnomah County Safety Net Clinic.
I think someone will be here to respond to that.
Good.
Is there any other questions of staff by committee? If not, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 4074. Is there a sign-up list for anyone who would like to testify on House Bill 4074?
We don't have a sign-up list.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chairman Hannah, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Smith. I'm a member of the Oregon House of Representatives representing District 59, however, living in District 57. To answer your question, Chair Hannah and Senator Dukes, what this amendment does is it is allocating $1.2 million that the Department of Human Services has had for since the end of the last general session. And it's trying to get the money out to those most rural clinics that are on the verge of closing as a result of lack of revenue. And so this was no commentary on any other clinics within the state, but it was an attempt to take care of those most rural, needy clinics, those that have no other option to health care.
Yes, Senator Duke.
But in doing so, we're cutting funding to the clinics in the most populated area of the state. I would think that would disenfranchise people in another part of the state. Isn't that correct?
Sure.
We're helping people in one part of the state at the cost of help to people in other parts of the state.
Chair Hannon, Senator Duke, what this amendment does is it actually gets money throughout the entire state of Oregon, focusing on the smallest and most rural clinics and those are throughout Oregon, on the coast, some in southern Oregon, and in eastern Oregon as well.
But it does it by taking them from those, the amendment, those who receive federal funding, who are, right, it gives them to those that are not federally qualified health centers, which means that those who are federally qualified would no longer receive any of the state funding.
There is going to be a proposed amendment to deal with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I will.
Senator Harper?
I'll wait.
Am I to understand that the federally funded clinics, i.e., Multnomah or whatever, they have federal funds back there, but what we're talking about are the clinics that have no safety to the safety net. Just the state funds, is that correct?
Senator Hammond.
That was the attempt there to, nobody is happy with any of this, but they're going to close or there is nobody. I know we have one in Christmas Valley here, 80 miles from everywhere, but I think that was the attempt is what I had thought I had understood. So.
Yeah,
there's a federal backup for the big ones, and there is no backup except this.
Chair Hammond, Senator Harper, that's exactly correct. The clinics that we're looking at here are those that do not receive federal reimbursement. These clinics have no opportunity other than through their operation to generate this money, and with the cuts that we've sustained, these clinics will be closing. So this is an opportunity to help clinics throughout all of Oregon, on the coast, Southern Oregon, and in Eastern Oregon.
Senator Duke.
Do we have any idea what this will do to the safety clinics who were expecting this money and now won't receive it?
Chairman Hammond, Senator Duke. Actually, the governor has been sitting on this money since the end of session, and they have not received this money, and I don't believe there was an intent to allocate this money. This is a legislative action to be proactive and to help our small rural clinics who don't have an opportunity to receive federal dollars.
Okay, further questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 4074? If not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4074. Oh, excuse me, you wanted to testify?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4074.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is John Christensen. I'm a staff person in the Office of Oregon State Senator Margaret Carter. And Senator Carter would like to express her opposition to Section 8 of House Bill 4074. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Not thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4074. And we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5100. Mr. Rocco.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, the House Bill 5100 was passed earlier today by the House. It is the disappropriation bill that implements this portion of this session's rebalance plan. I think you have before you a budget report from that bill, a list of the selective cuts that were made in the bill, and an approximate count of the across-the-board cuts that come to about $40 million. The plan that you see has approximately $47 million in selective cuts and fund shifts. There's $40 million in across-the-board cuts that do not have K-12 affected at all. And then there's in Section 2 of the bill, there's a restoration of about $4.5 million to restore disproportionate cuts that were made to selected programs from the third special session when you reduce the available salary funding dollars from $100 million to $77 million. The resulting total of these actions and the actions in 4074 that you've just heard about would provide $82 million in fund shifts and budget cuts. And when combined with the $400 million of bonds in House Bill 4073, that provides the amount to rebalance the budget, current deficit.
Okay. Dave heard the explanation of LFO staff. Are there any questions of LFO staff by committee members? Is there anyone who would like to testify on House Bill 5100? Ms. Karras?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Grattan Sheriff, Director of Government Relations for the Organization System, submitted to the committee a copy of a letter dated June 26, 2002, which was addressed to Senator Hannon at the end of the third special session when, at the end of the budget cutting process, the Oregon University System found itself with a $49,581,000 cut to its general fund appropriation, approximately 6.2% of the legislatively approved budget for the triennium. And the interest of the committee at that time was to, as a result of negotiations and an add back which was made to the budget to prevent an even greater cut, that undergraduate instruction be protected from the impact of that third special session cut. We agreed to that, and the letter says as much, but I direct yourself to the last line of point four. The further cuts to the OUS budget in this or a subsequent special session of triennium would breach the firewall you desire on undergraduate cell values. And it's, Mr. Chairman, we honored the agreement we had with you in June, and we're here to say that given the impact of $6,576,010 additional, bringing the university system to a $56 million impact, it's no longer possible to protect the undergraduate instruction budget. If this were the case, then probably some contribution to this cut would have to come from there. The chancellor had a meeting with all seven of the university institution presidents on Tuesday. When the session is done and the actual cut is known, he will share with them their portion of that. The presidents would then do their best case to develop a budget to protect as much as they could the interest of each campus and return that to the chancellor for action by the board at their October 18 meeting. And at that time, there could be cuts which would be beyond the firewall you wish to create and which we've tried to protect at this point.
Okay. I appreciate you making that statement on behalf of the chancellor and the board, because I realize that the June reduction, we are beyond that with this piece of legislation, and I understand why you cannot maintain your commitment on the separation of the firewall.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we gave our word, and we accept it, and I need to come and tell you that we can't. Thank you, sir.
All right. Are there any questions? No, thank you, Gretton. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 5100? Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Association of Oregon Faculties, the Oregon Head Start Association, the Oregon Judges Association. As you can imagine, there are a number of issues in this budget that we might have a concern about. We also represent the Independent Living Centers. To start off, as has been on this budget for some time, a $2.4 million cut in the Oregon pre-kindergarten program. It's listed, has continued to be listed as an expansion of that program, when in fact we thought we were going to be funded at 50%. We are now dropping and probably down to about 42% of eligibles in the state. You have seen fit in the last four special sessions when this cut has been proposed to you to restore it at each time. I understand, Mr. Chair, that that things continue to be in a deficit situation. However, we believe that this particular program is a basis for education in the state, and we continue to ask you to restore this program. I would like Bill to touch a little bit about the Judicial Department's cuts. We are not here representing the Judicial Department, but we do represent Criminal Defense Lawyers and the Oregon Judges Association. And I think the particular cuts in this department and those programs are very severe when coupled with what's happened over the last four special sessions.
Mr. Chairman, for your record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Judges Association and Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I want to briefly summarize the status of the budget for the court operations and for indigent defense for this biennium. To date in the special sessions, those budgets have been cut a total of about 9%. It's been a cut deeper than most state agencies and other state entities. On the indigent defense side, the cuts have been particularly severe. In the second special session, there was a cut of $12.5 million made against that fund. That amount created problems that have been largely dealt with by the fact that fortunately the caseload has moderated. So the original caseload assumptions, as we sit here today, look as though they will be able to be accommodated within that 12.5% cut. In June, an additional 10% was taken from that fund. The result of that is that, $10 million. The result of that is that next April, the Indigent Defense Fund will be out of money. The across-the-board portion of the cut that you have in front of you is another $1 million out of that Indigent Defense Fund. That amount will mean that that system will run out of money probably 30 days earlier. And I don't need to explain to you the implications of that. In the criminal justice system, you got to have all parts of that system functioning at an adequate funding level. And so what happens in the defense affects what law enforcement can do, what prosecutors can do, what happens to the correctional system. And it's already a huge problem that will need to be addressed. And this exacerbates that problem. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions? No, thank you both.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, we had one more. The Independent Living Centers also has been on every cut list. It was a program that you approved $1.3 million in the regular session. You have seen to restore those dollars. You made very specific instructions in a budget note to the agencies in terms of, or to Department of Human Services, in terms of those dollars, that they not be cut on a disproportionate basis along with other programs. That, in fact, was done. You have restored part of those dollars in this budget. That's about around $300,000. There's still about $350,000 short, we believe, at the program you've supported in the past. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of staff or committee? Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? That will close public hearing.
Mr. Chair, I had a couple of questions of staff, if I could.
Sure.
Clarification.
Very good.
I see several places here where we've got National Marine Fisheries Fund shift. Have we resolved that is the money here, isn't the money here dilemma?
Chair, Senator Dukes, that money is no longer being considered in this version of our bill. So.
See my little sheet.
It's not included in the bill.
Okay. Is there anything else on the sheets that aren't included?
There's a lot of things on that sheet that are not included. It's only the items in the far right-hand column that are actually included in the bill.
So anything where we've got, well, that may be the only thing that has the federal funds. Okay. And then on the fish hatchery, it says we need $427,000, but other funds is $474,000.
Mr. Chair, the reason for that is that the general fund cut is $427,000 targeted. However, the Department of Fish and Wildlife share of the $40 million across the board would result in an additional $50,000 cut to fish hatchery. So we have accommodated that by increasing their ability to spend other funds so that there would be no net effect to fish hatchery.
And the across the board that we're talking to is the one in this bill?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Senator? Thank you. We're going to open a work session on the House Bill 4074. B.
Chair, I move that we put House Bill 474 to forward the due pass recommendation.
You heard the motion. Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be voting no on this bill for a variety of reasons, but the biggest one is the questions I was asking about the amendment that the House put in here were for a specific reason. I represent rural parts of the state. My entire district is rural. I mean, my biggest city is 10,000 people. And I've been in this process quite a while, and I've gone and hustled money for my part of the state for years, but I don't believe that I've ever gone to another part of the state to get it and said, my part of the state gets it and your part of the state doesn't. That's something that I don't think we ought to do in this process. I don't think it helps us move along, and I don't think it helps us get along together. And I think there's probably a better way of raising it. I don't doubt that this money is badly needed, but I think that revenue should have been raised to do it. I don't think the answer is to take it from Multnomah County.
Thank you. Any other objections?
I can make a statement. I am going to be a no vote, and I think the record is replete with my involvement on February 28th session, the February 25th session, and the June 12th session, that I have worked very hard to try to be part of a resolution to each one of those crises. And so this is a sad moment for me because I do believe that we all have to come together. I just feel that there are the votes on the Senate floor for less cuts and less bonding, and I realize that still leaves another issue out there. And therefore, at this time, I just can't support the level of cuts or the amount of bonding, so I'm going to have to be a no vote, and I hope that my fellow senators accept that and understand that.
For the record, show that Senator Dukes and Senator Courtney are no votes. Motion passed. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4074B. Open the work session. We'll open the work session on House Bill 5100A.
Try to move 5100A to the floor as you pass.
You've heard the motion. You've heard the motion. Any discussion? Any objection? Senator, let the record show that Senator Courtney sits.
Mr. Chair, I have one item. This one. Proposed budget, no addition
for the budget one? Report. One's the cost of the same.
Okay.
This is what we imposed upon the angel on the main, and the other one's the bill you talked about.
Can you name it?
Yeah.
No, so, could I have just for the record, this is previous. The bill we're voting on now is the 5100,
which is the
that is the disappropriation tax. Is that right, Mr. President?
Yeah.
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. President.
We passed 4074B and
Rocco, would you like to?
Mr. Chair, members, there has been a discussion about including a budget note in this particular budget report that addresses some issues regarding funding for selected programs and providing an opportunity for those programs to come to the emergency board to discuss the any disproportionate effects that this particular rebalance package would have on these specific programs. I provided that budget note to you, if you want to include that in the budget report, you can do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dukes?
Could I ask whose budget note this is?
Let's see, he was the author of this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, this budget note was worked out amongst various members earlier this afternoon.
I was just sort of curious, Mr. Chair, how it was that we came to decide that these specific groups were worthy of access to the emergency board and not the other specific groups that were in the bill. I mean, somebody has decided to hand-select some groups that can have access, they get in trouble, to emergency board funding, and that other groups don't get access, and I was just sort of curious how we came to that conclusion. I don't remember a public hearing on it, so...
Let me ask if there's any objection to putting the budget note in the into the bill.
Sure.
Okay. That's the record.
If we don't know where it came from and nobody's claiming responsibility for it, and at least some close out.
So, have you given consideration, Mr. Chair, to a generic budget note like this?
No.
That's what I thought. I just thought. All state governments and some of the sides.
Senator Dukes objects to the budget note inclusion. Any other objections?
No objection.
Okay. And then we still have the motion on the floor. And we have Senator Dukes objecting to the motion. Any other objections?
This is the main motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Is this the whole bill?
Yes.
I'm a no. I thought you were going to vote on this budget note for the rest of your life.
We already did that.
So let the record show that Senator Courtney and Senator Dukes object. Motion passed. And with that, we'll close the...
I need to refer to recess.
On this bill?
No.
Work session on Senate Bill 5100. And we're going to be in recess.
We'll open the work session on House Bill 4073A.
Chair, I move House Bill 4073A and control the recast recommendation.
I need to ask you a question on this.
You've heard the motion. Does the committee have any questions? Staff?
Sure. Dick, do you have a list of what we're spending the money on for this master settlement agreement currently? I mean, I'm just trying to get a handle on what we won't be spending it on. Or is it maybe a short list? There's.
I have no idea.
Doesn't some of it, isn't it going to healthcare related things now?
Oh, the master settlement?
Yeah.
There is no strings attached to the money. There's no legal requirement that it go anywhere. Where it's going right now, I think it goes into the general fund. And where it goes, you know, the general fund appropriations is co-mingled. So.
For some reason, I thought we had tried to put it into healthcare related things. I was just trying to get a feel for it. If we redirect it, what we're taking it away from.
Right.
That's what they're dealing with.
Good. Any more questions?
Could you clarify for some of these? So right now, the master settlement monies are kept in a separate fund. They don't go into the general fund, but they are used like general fund dollars. They are not specified for anything. They don't have to be used for health care.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Any objections to the motion?
I object.
Senator Courtney, Senator Dukes, we'll let the record show. Motion passed. With that, we will close the work session, and we will adjourn to the call of the recess. We recessed until they followed the chair.
Very good.